Welcome back to the Fastest Known podcast, and we have a very special guest today talking to us from Innsbruck, Austria. Welcome, Michael Geisler.
Hello. Hi, Buzz. Thanks for having me here.
And thank you for your English being so good. Us Americanos, we're unilingual, while the Europeans, lovely. So helpful to be able to speak multiple languages. So thank you for helping us out on this one, Michael.
Yeah, sure.
Now, you are one of our esteemed volunteer regional editors. This is very cool. Of course, we all wish Peter Backman was doing everything. We actually wish Peter Backman was counting all the votes taking place in the United States right now. I think it would get done quicker if he did it all himself. But that aside, he couldn't quite keep track of everything. So we have regional editors, and you are one of them. So which countries are you tracking the FKTs in, and what does it mean to be a regional editor?
I'm covering Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Italy, and I think Poland, these Central European countries. And it's very interesting. I see now definitely why Peter is reaching a limit here. I'm getting almost every day some new routes to check, some new FKT attempts, and especially on the after some weekends, Monday and Tuesday, I see my inbox and I see there quite some new attempts there in my inbox. Yeah, and my tasks are then to check, validate them if everything is okay, if the mode that they ran is also okay, if they ran supported, self-supported, or unsupported, and then to add this on the homepage.
Good work. And we have 11 regional editors. People can go on to the team page in the website and look them up if they'd like. It's under the More tab on the top menu bar. I'm not going to read everyone off right now, but thank you to all the regional editors who have made this happen. And we're going to learn more from you, Michael, here in a second. And I also want to thank the people who have supported what we're trying to do here. We just received a check from Patreon today for $578. So that's not a ton of money. So please keep those cards and donations coming in, folks. You can go on the support page, become a Patreon subscriber, or just kick in a one-time donation. But none of us get paid. So if you are enjoying this, please support the continuation and kick in a little donation. Okay, Michael. So Europe is a little different. You have some interesting observations there, but I'm going to just touch in real quickly on the global pandemic. So I don't think your part of Europe is being locked down quite like France and Spain are, but maybe it is. So give us an update on the situation in your part of the world.
Yes. So now in Europe, we have October, beginning of November, and the second wave of COVID is hitting Europe now. And also in Austria and Germany, there is something like a lockdown light. We're allowed to be outside, but only alone or with maximum one additional person. So at least you can go out and do some running and enjoy the mountains, but not with too many friends. that's the drawback. I mean, in Austria and Germany, it's a little bit better. I think this time France and is really difficult to do something. I mean, there was also a period in September where some races took place in Austria, Germany, Italy. The most of the participants come from were local and did not travel too much around. I saw some people coming also from the UK or from countries a little bit far away, but much, much less than normally known for these races.
Lockdown light. I appreciate that. So I think that's what most countries are trying to do. It's a sliding scale. We see what's going on and you move the needle to make the appropriate adjustment because we're always balancing the economy and health.
Yes, exactly. Yes. it's always going up and down. Yes. When there is there are not so many corona cases in the country, then you get a little bit more relaxed and maybe, and this is, and then it comes back after some weeks again.
Right, the ebb and the flow, but it's not going away anytime soon. Michael, back in April, you sent us an interesting email. You proposed a challenge, an FKT challenge in Austria. Very cool, very interesting. We agreed to do that. So I believe you managed this FKT challenge over the summer, and I think this just wrapped up with a little virtual party. So tell us how this worked.
Yes, exactly. A colleague of mine and myself, we were really bummed because there were no races throughout the summer. And so we said, okay, what can we do to make it interesting for us and for also other trail runners around Austria, Switzerland, or the surrounding countries? So we said, okay, we are picking some routes, long one, an ultra distance with 70, 80 kilometers, a marathon one with 40, 50 kilometers, and a sprint one with around 20 kilometers. On routes that we like to run and also want to show other people. And we prepared a homepage, put it out there, and we also searched for some prices, and we got very good feedback from the industry, who also did not have any races to support. So we got very interesting prices. Sunto supported us, and Dynafit, a European company for trail running and ski mountaineering stuff. That was very good. So there was a nice incentive for the people to run it, and yeah, we realized then that the routes that we selected, especially these are the routes that we like to run. We love to run. So they were quite technical with out in the mountains. And we got the feedback then that these routes, yeah, okay, you never can run them too competitive because they are quite steep, quite technical, difficult. But exactly that what you need for a FKT.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. And we're going to put that homepage on the written show notes. But right now, tell us what the homepage is.
It's fastestknowntimeaustria.com.
That's easy to remember. But again, listeners, that will be on our written show notes to go look it up. And so people can see three or four routes that you chose?
So we have that also in Austria, we have a federal state, and in these states, for each state, we have three routes. And in our state, in Austria, Tirol, we have also a monthly route, and especially the monthly route where you have only 30 days to run it was highly competitive. On one of them, we had 100 people running it in 1 month.
Wow, good work. So essentially it's a virtual race, except you don't go head to head.
Exactly.
That's essentially what's happening.
Yeah.
So you established one of the best routes, numerous routes in different parts of your territory. And then people have 1 month or the whole summer to post their best time. So they could do it three or four times if they want.
Exactly. Yes. So, at the end of the month, the strategic guys really, came in running it at the last day again in the afternoon or so, doing some gambling if it's dry or if it's on the last dry day to run it, to really have a good time there, waiting with posting it, and so to really that it was quite dense and very interesting at the end of the month with on our Facebook group also, it was very interesting to see who is posting something, who has the new best time of it. And so also for the women, it was very ambitious also for the women there.
Well, I love this, Michael. This is so, people must be excited to hear what clever idea you had, because what I'm hearing is some people strategically waited until the end of the month. And so they didn't want their time to get broken. So they left it right to the last minute. Now, here's a question. Did they have to post it immediately on running?
No. Of course, most of the time you saw it because you see who has the best time on the segment on Strava. But we also edited it manually. So the people had to send it to us manually because we did not want to rely on Strava also. And the only thing was 5 days after the end of the month, they had to submit it. But that was the only one, yeah.
Okay. All right. And so you experienced a closing charge. People got after it.
Absolutely. But at 1 month, I remember the last weekend of the month, suddenly it got rainy and slippery. So everyone who waited too long, that was not the best choice there, because that was too slow then.
Strategy always pays off. I see your closing party is November 15th, virtual party.
Exactly.
And I said, get some chips and beer and get on the treadmill and join the party.
Exactly. So we closed the date for running end of October. Because now, end of October, it starts to snow on top of the mountains, and some of the routes were not possible to run anymore. So we said end of October is the final date there. And now in mid of November, we are having our race party, basically. First, we tried to have it in person with a small run, but now we had to go virtual here. This is the people should have a good time. We had people who ran all of them, all routes, really going with public transport there, running for 20 hours on the ultra route, then missing the last bus back home to the city. So there were amazing stories, and we hope that during the virtual session we can have some of these stories, how the people, what they experienced there.
Excellent work. Well, listeners, definitely go to the written show notes. We'll provide a link to this so you could see what happened. But unless one speaks German, I don't think one could participate in the virtual party, could we?
You can try. I mean, you can learn some German maybe, and so. But I think we have also some people who are not so fluent in German. We will make some interviews also in English. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is so good. I appreciate your creativity there. So, how have FKTs evolved this summer? I mean, is it look different this year as it before?
I think so, yes. It's different. In the past years, you have some runners who are going for one or two FKTs during the summer. But now this year, when there are no races, a lot also of the high profile runners, they want to do something. They want to have some projects, do something for their sponsors and so. And you see really a lot of on both ends. You see them on both ends. One, really some high-profile runners doing FKTs, with video, with really good advertising on the different channels. But then also all the mid-pack and the end-pack runners going also for FKTs. So you see also there posting, okay, we did this long route, this FKT on this mountain range, not going for the full FKT, but just to experience it and to rerun it and to see, okay, the maybe one of the European Sky Race champions or so is running this one in 5-6 hours. I need 10-12 hours, but okay, I did it on this. I did it also in one piece and came back. Yeah.
So in other words, they don't need to set the FKT to have a good time. It's like a race. You don't enter a race because you expect to win. Well, some people do, but you know, 20,000 other people want to race for personal satisfaction. And so FKTs can be the same thing. It can be a good list of good routes to do.
Exactly, yes. And until now, until this summer, on the FKT homepage that you and Peter are hosting, in Europe, there are not too many routes up there uploaded. I think this exploded also this summer, where a lot of people thought, okay, I'm not the best runner, but I have here a really nice long-distance walking, hiking trail in my backyard or connecting some cities. And yeah, we know it in the region, but there is nowhere FKT known for that. So I run it. I'm not the fastest, but I have a first known time of this one and submit it there as well.
The first known time is an excellent strategy, isn't it?
Yes.
And people are definitely taking advantage of that, which makes more work for us, but that's totally fair. That's how it should be. And indeed, I was approving all routes for about a month and a half this spring, and Germany was coming in strong.
Yes, yes.
Like France and Italy got closed down, but Germany hit hard. I wish I could speak German this spring, but it's very interesting, Michael, and you're going to explain this to us, but I would see something come in and be this, you know, really long name that I couldn't possibly pronounce, 12 syllables, and I thought, someone just made this up. You know, they're just trying to get an FKT, so I'd Google it, and boom, there it was. It's a totally organized route. It has its own website. It has its own logo, and it's, I was thinking, Germany is an amazing country. I think the cliche is true. You're very organized over there. Here we just have these routes out in the middle of the woods that have some name, maybe. But in Germany, you have an entire website for routes. And indeed, the tourist boards, the local municipalities are really supporting this, aren't they?
Absolutely, yes. For example, in northern Germany, where there are not too many mountains or just smaller hills, through a nice valley next to a river, there might be a biking path, and the local tourist board is advertising this biking path. Where you can bike 50, 60 kilometers or so from one point to a bigger river. And you have everything there. You have information where you can eat, where you can stop, some public transport information. So this is also in northern Germany, where it's not so many mountains, but I think especially there, this is very well known. And on top of that, you have that very similar also in the mountains in Austria, Italy, or in mountainous region of Germany, where you have these long hiking or long distance hiking paths. And in these regions, you have a very good infrastructure with mountain huts, refugios, and so, where you can hike from one hut to the other, where you're on 2,000 meters, 2,500 meters altitude. You sleep there and you hike then the next day. And for an FKT, basically these routes, 40, 50 kilometers or longer, you don't need 6 or 7 days like the hikers. We run it in one day, and well, at least we try to.
I very much appreciate this, because in the States it can be a little frustrating, a little disappointing by comparison, because the United States Forest Service does zero promotion. It almost is like they downplay it. The National Park System downplays it, and out west, no municipality promotes anything of the kind. Back east a little bit. But in Germany, in your area, the tourist boards, the government-funded boards, are putting up great signage. They're putting up facilities. They supply free trail maps. So as you said, someone like me could just show up and run really good routes.
Exactly. And there is a lot of information on the internet where the information is provided there, yes.
Now, you have 2 FKTs on the website. I bet you have more. I think you probably could do more, but you just haven't uploaded them because it's sort of, you want to be a little more moderate since you are a regional editor. Is that right?
I wish so. No. I tried to get some additional ones, but it's not always possible. And in the Alps area, the routes that are really known, they are very competitive. They are unbelievably competitive. Especially this summer, you have at one point on a 100 kilometer trail, 2 top runner who were in the, one was in the top 5 of Tour de Gent, and Tour de Gant, and the other one is top 10 from UTMB. They were running without knowing that the others running on the same day, and at the end they are only after 17 hours running or so, they are only divided by 10-15 minutes.
That's very competitive. So 2 world-class runners coincidentally run the same route in the same day, and 17 hours in, they were only 15 minutes apart. Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, more credibility for your Mount Balto Traverse in Italy and the Catwalk in Austria. So I guess these aren't obscure routes. You have to get at, if you're in your part of the world, to get an FKT, you have to be pretty good, is what you're saying.
For the established ones, yes. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. What you mentioned that 100K route, and you also voluntarily submitted a few routes for submission into the fastest known time of the year award. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. And again, the FKT of the year is going to be back for 2020, and it will be back again in a separate edition for Europe. I was going to say EU, but the UK is not part of the EU, so I had to say Europe. I'm including the UK. Sorry about that little nuance there. But at any rate, so there'll be 2 separate editions, one for North America and one for Europe. And you submitted a couple ideas, and you were, Michael, it's fun reading this. You were so enthusiastic, and you were so impressed with this. So, well, tell us a little bit about some of these highlights that you've seen.
Yeah. For example, there is one route in Germany, the Watzmann Traverse. It is only 22 kilometers long and 2,200 meters in vertical gain, but it has everything that a trail runner wants to have. It's first, it's very steep, then it's very technical, almost via ferrata, and then there is a brutal downhill, and at the end you have to run it back out really fast on a forest way. We had Hannes Namberger, who is one of the top sky runners on the ultra distance on the world tour. He did it in 3 hours straight, I think. And then suddenly the local ski mountaineer Anton Palzer, who is also one of the top three ski mountaineers in the world, who comes from this region, saw this and said, no, he needs to do something. So he really ran it with support and put time with, I think, 2:50 or less than 2:50 in there for 22 kilometers, 2,200 meters vertical gain. It's an incredible time. And if you see that, how rocky and how you have to scramble up there, it's unbelievable. Normal tourists or normal hikers wouldn't do this route in 2 days. They are sleeping in a mountain hut up there.
Well, he went sub 3 hours on a 2 day hike. Well, your description was interesting because I have not done, I've done nothing in Germany. My apologies. I've been to France and Italy and Spain and Andorra, but not in Germany and Austria. So, of course, the ethic there is very different than in North America. Here we call it trail running. There, I believe, you call it mountain running, because that's mostly what people are doing. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, that was the case some years ago, 10 years or so ago. That was really the challenge. Who is the first up on the mountain? Really mountain running uphill. Now, trail running is really gaining momentum here, and in the last 5 years or so, it really exploded with a lot of races. And this really means then you're going longer distances, you go up and down. So also the downhill racing is now added there as well. So that's very common now also in Europe.
Gotcha. Particularly, as you said, in northern Germany, where you move away from the Alps, you have terrific forests, but not a lot of high mountains. And so they're out there running the trails.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And I was not in this area yet, but some colleagues and some friends were running there, also towards Poland. And these were amazing trails and quite exhausting also, because you never have something, not a flat part in there. It's always going up, down, all the time.
Right. So Germany, could we say, Germany and Austria sort of have two divisions. Would this be honest or would this be stupid of me to say? So in the south, in the high Alps, it's very mountainous and there's a certain ethic there with a strong background in skiing and mountain sports. While when one moves to the north, little less so. And a lot of the FKT routes there, like you said, are following long rivers and valleys. They're going past fantastic breweries and wineries. Is it a little different between north and south?
I think so, yes. What I see now in the FKT submissions is on the flatter courses from the north, they're really fast there. It's if you look at the time that they are running per kilometers, that is quite fast. In the mountains, you need the technique, you need it, the stamina to really go through the long trail there, the long route. So it's a little bit different here, and also it's not so easy to get. If you need something to drink or need something to eat, you need to be careful in the Alps there.
You need to be careful because there isn't anything to eat or drink?
No, in the mountains, it's more difficult to get something than on in the flatter areas of the north.
I see. Okay. Well, how about contrasting your area, which is Austria, Germany, the Tyrol, with other parts of the Alps? Is the style similar where you are to the style in France, Chamonix, for example?
Yes, I think it's very similar. That's right. In Chamonix, it's just all on the next level. You're not running like in Austria up to 3,000 meters. You can go 1,000 meter more up. So it's in in this area, in Chamonix or the France part, it's just even bigger. The Alps, the Eastern Alps here in Austria and in this area, it's all a little bit smaller.
Gotcha. Still very competitive, but just a little bit smaller.
That's true, yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. When I was in the Dolomites, northern Italy, I was surprised. I did not know this until I went there. Everybody speaks two languages. The towns have two names. One name is Italian. The other name was in German. So the culture there really is the mountain culture, and the border is a little more arbitrary. It's almost like if you cross the border, it's the same culture, even though you've crossed a political boundary.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. The reason for that is until 100 years ago, at the World War I, the Dolomites and this area, South Tyrol, was still with Austria. And during the World War, they built a lot of at this fighting border where the war was taking place. They built in the Alps a line where the soldiers have to stay over winter. They were fighting here against the people from the war opponent, and the logistics ways, and so they are still available there, and a lot of the path and hiking ways in the Dolomites, in Italy, in Austria, and so they are still from this time, and you can see there still a lot of where this the border was on the World War I.
And those are that's the origination of the famous Via Ferratas, the Iron Ways,
which
I did not exist anywhere in North America, but are quite common over there. And by the way, a few people, oddly, have borrowed the term and established new Via Ferratas here at tourist areas. And they're kind of, they're a little foo-foo, if you will, because I've been on some of the Via Ferratas in Italy, and they're serious. They're amazing.
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. as a trail runner, you sometimes, if you're looking out for a route and so, and you see where other people are running, and you did not realize when you're planning this your trip. Oh, this is a Via Ferrata. So where is my harness and so? But on the easier ones, you can go also without. But if it's getting more dangerous and more vertical up, then it's better to get back to the hotel and to the car and get your harness.
Well, for those who don't know what we're referring to, the Via Ferrata is fixed lines, not the normal nylon, but steel cable. They're permanently bolted to the rock, as Michael said, for soldiers to use. And they're oftentimes caves and reinforcements and bunkers up there where they could live. And nowadays, it's much safer to use Via Ferrata specialized equipment, which is the harness and always a pair of gloves, so you can clip into the cable.
Yeah,
and if it's not too steep, you can skip the harness, but definitely bring the gloves.
Yes. No, and you're right, especially in the Dolomites, there are some really nice Via Ferratas there. You run up there, you get into your harness, you climb up. In the background, you have the Dreizinnen there. So it's a really nice adventure there. And a little bit of difference or an alternative to running. Yeah.
I don't even know this now that we're speaking about it. Are there any Via Ferratas that are FKT routes?
Yes, part of it. Yeah. I just had one on a glacier where they're running up one of the highest mountains in Austria, or one of a high mountain in Austria, to the Dachstein. And there is a glacier on top. And before the glacier, there is also Via Ferrata. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Michael, you are an expert on the cool routes in your area. And I could ask you what they are, but no one will be able to remember them. So instead, I'm going to ask you to email them to me, and I will just put links to them in the written show notes, which might be a little easier. Or you could just give us a verbal description.
Yeah.
Let's do that. We'll do both. You'll email me the link and a quick verbal description now as to why you think they're cool.
Yeah. So there is one route in on the Alps, and this is really more like, yeah, really similar to the long through hiking routes in the US. It's a 550 kilometer stretch from Munich to Venice. So really,
wow,
from north of the Alps towards to the south. It's a basically a direct line, 550 kilometers, 20,000 meters of vertical gain. And actually on the FKT homepage, there is no FKT yet. It is very popular with the through hikers in Europe, but I suppose no one of them did yet submit here an attempt. I know.
Yeah. Is that, pardon me, is that one of those named routes with the numbers then?
I'm not 100% sure. It's the...
Because in France, they number them.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. I don't think there is a number on this one.
Okay. Belgium, they number them as well. But this one's just named.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It will be in the show notes. And actually, there was an attempt this year by two very good trail runners from Italy. But the first 100 kilometers are basically flat. And they were too fast there. So when they came after the first night in the mountains, they had to stop because they had problems with their feet and could not continue anymore. But it's a very interesting and very challenging route there.
Okay, good call. In the show notes. What else? What else really? Well, that 550 is a little long. So say travel restrictions ease up next summer, and someone listening to this podcast says, let's go over to the Tyrol and do something. What do you think they should do? And let's say they also are okay technically. Not brilliant, but okay.
A very nice and scenic one is in Zillertal. It's the Berliner Höhenweg. This is a 100 kilometer route in Zillertal, where you really go from you go up to almost 3,000 meters in altitude. You start and you go there, and there are lots of mountain huts, mountain refugios along the way, where you can also, if necessary, if you can sleep, you can sleep there, or you just get something to eat. But otherwise, there is hardly any cell phone reception there. It's very, it's very nature. A lot of nature is in there.
Now, Höhenweg, which I just mispronounced, my apologies, that means high route, does it not?
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if one can speak German, one can figure out the routes a little bit by their name.
Yeah, but I think we will add them as well in the show notes, yes, to make it easier.
Good thinking. So, Michael, what's next for you? I liked what you said earlier about ski mountaineering, which is kind of, sort of, coming to the United States, almost entirely out west, however. But ski mountaineering has been big in the Alps for decades. I mean, do you participate in that? Or are you going to be outdoors running in the winter?
Both, but I really like ski mountaineering. Yes, we have in Europe there are basically two parts. Either you go up a normal ski piste, which is in the skiing areas, either during operations or in the morning or in the night. That's normally in our area. Some skiing areas have a ski touring night. That means you, after work, you can go there during the night, put up a headlamp and go uphill to the top of the skiing area. There is normally a restaurant which is open until 10 o'clock in the evening, and have your dinner there or just refill there. And then before 10 o'clock, you go down to the valley with your headlamp, go back, and you have a nice evening out after work.
And is that a special pass? So that'd be cheaper than a day pass.
Normally in Europe, they only charge you for the parking. For the parking lot, you don't need a ski ticket there because you're not using the infrastructure.
Okay. See, Europe is so far advanced of the United States. Here in Boulder, we have a local ski area, which is incredibly restrictive. They have an uphill only pass, which is only open sometimes out of the year, and some hours of the day, very, very restricted hours of the day. And Michael, there is no restaurant at the top.
No, that's a you have to earn your beer, and that's really nice. If after a nice climb, you know that you get a cold beer in there. That's very nice.
It's more civilized, let's put it that way. Good for you. But just like with running, no ski mountaineering races. And I should note, pardon me for the listeners, ski mountaineering has a very wide definition of what it is. Obviously, you can go up mountains on skis, that's ski mountaineering. But its more strict definition is where one uses very lightweight, very, very efficient skis and also could race. And this isn't, you know, a lift service to the top and run down through gates at all. It's always climbing up using skins. And then you quickly, efficiently remove the skins and ski down, often a different location. So you're kind of doing essentially running routes on skis, except they're always quite steep.
Yes, exactly. There are a lot of races in the Alps for ski mountaineering. And as you said, it can be both. It can be on the slopes in the afternoon when the ski lifts are closing, or this is a full event in the backcountry where you have where the organizer first checks which route or which mountain is safe to go, and then you go up to, as fast as possible to the top of the mountain, and on another route back down as fast as possible on the back through the backcountry there. So there are very interesting races there. Yeah, it is not.
When you're going as fast as possible back down, there are no control gates. You're taking the route, whatever route you have the courage to take.
That's correct. There are some direction gates, but not like on the downhill World Cup or so, where you have to go through each gate. Yeah. I just saw on Strava a colleague who is participating on races, who is going down with 120 kilometers per hour. On the small skis, yeah, on the tiny skis.
So his watch recorded a fastest split of 120 kilometers per hour.
True, yeah.
Okay. So friends, make sure you're feeling very fit and very strong before you take up ski mountaineering, but an amazing sport if you want to give it a try. So that's what you're doing this winter, Michael. And then next summer, next spring, some more running, some more FKTs. What do you think the future brings? I know this is a ridiculous question, but you know, you're over there in the other side of the world. And so I thought I'd ask you, what's coming up? What do you see next spring and summer looking like?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. Yes. Definitely running. Yes. We will also see how we proceed with our FKT challenge here in Austria. If we do it in a similar way, maybe it looks like that. Yeah. as we see now, this up and downs where it's a little bit relaxed COVID measures, and then with again more tougher COVID measures, it is it will be an up and down, and hopefully some we saw some races already here, and we hope that with some precautions taken by these by the race organizers, it's possible to execute some of the races. We had some of the races in September, and it was very good, because when the organizer can provide a concept, a strategy, how to deal with all the people on the start and on a and when they come to aid station out on the trail, most of them are alone or in a small group, so there is not much which can cause problems. And so that should be okay. I hope that there will be some races next year, because otherwise the organizers will have problems continuing to have that in the next couple of years. But on the other side, yes, also the FKTs will be out there, and people will have the opportunity again to focus more on the FKTs.
Well said, Michael. The door to races will be cracking open while the door to FKTs is wide open.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you sharing the perspective from Europe.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here. Yes. Thank you.